Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. It's Thursday. And it's time for our 13 Reasons Why. It's hard to be too excited about it. It's hard to be... Whoa! I'm getting all kinds of feedback. Why is that happening?
Is that your phone?
There we go. Okay.
Jeez.
That was... Ooh. That was like...
That was...
What kinds of feedback?
There it goes again. It goes again. Your phone has a mind of its own.
It's all over the place. Okay. Well, hopefully... We still have listeners after
technical
that.
Technical difficulties. Yes, man. Please hang in there. We'll get this right.
My goodness. Well, yeah, so it should be back. So now, welcome back.
No, that's right. That's what you were saying, right? Welcome back.
Welcome back after those technical difficulties here. So here we are for our seventh session. And this today we're going to talk about tape 6, and it's episodes 11 and 12. What?
Correct. That's correct.
Yeah, it's the seventh session because we did an intro.
Right.
That was number one. Mm-hmm. And so today's tape 6. Right. And so very excited about this. This is a big week.
Everybody told me, as we've said before, I've been watching it a week at a time because I didn't want to know the ending.
Okay. Right.
So I wanted to bring that perspective. And everybody said, wait till you get to this tape. And they were absolutely right. This is really compelling.
It's so heavy. It
begins with an ambulance scene.
Yeah.
You know, of a 17-year-old. Well, which 17-year-old?
Right.
Has a head wound, you know?
Yeah.
And so you're hooked immediately, and then it just becomes more compelling as you watch it.
Right, right.
And I had to confess, I couldn't not watch the last episode.
Yeah, I know. You told me that this morning, so it was good. I was glad to hear the confession.
Right. Had to watch the rest.
So you already watched episode 13.
Yes.
But we will talk about that one next week. And so next week, the plan for next week, and we'll say this at the end too, but plan next week is to talk about episode 13 and then to sort of wrap the whole thing up.
Right.
And kind of talk about what we might do next and kind of go from there.
I like the way this whole thing has worked out.
I do too.
I don't know whether it was this particular show or whether it's the forum or the discussion or whatever, but this has been fun to do, and I hope it's been helpful.
Yeah, this morning we recorded the podcast is actually going to go out tomorrow morning, which is a movie review.
Our first
movie review, and it was good. It was fun talking to you about movies because we don't talk about movies enough.
Because I don't watch movies.
You don't watch movies, so
but I'm going to change.
I see this as an opportunity. To introduce you to the world that is cinema.
Cinema.
So it's going to be great. I'm working on my list.
You and my children are going to pull me into the 21st century.
Kicking and screaming.
Okay.
So
I spent a lot of time in the 19th century.
A long time.
That's good. Okay. All right.
You don't want me to go into that.
No. No, that was not an invitation.
That's right.
It was just as... No, it wasn't an invitation. So, this is tape.
This is tape 6.
6.
So, and it's going to be a great discussion because we have so much to talk about with these two tapes. Well, let me say it again. We have so much to talk about, but it's a few things, but they're dense. There's a lot to talk about, just a couple of things.
That's what I noticed about this. When I was watching it, I wasn't writing as many things down as I normally do, partly because it was so interesting, but partly because there are just a few major themes in this one.
Right.
Because you know all the characters now, and you know all the themes.
Yeah.
And so, but the themes in this one are much more significant, larger.
You're right. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna start off with our first slide here, and there we are today. But this slide here, and so you know, the thing that I think really jumped out at the beginning of this episode 11, was
you know, they're going to the party. Right. And this is when they're going, this is kind of returning back to Jessica's party.
Back to the party that we had seen before.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so remember she said a couple episodes ago that there were multiple things. She's going to take them one at a time.
Right.
And this
right.
is the last one as it relates to that party.
Right.
And so as she's talking about it, of course, this tape is all about Clay. And
that's
we,
right.
We were introduced to that at the end of the last episode when Tony told Clay, you know, this one is your tape.
You have to watch it. Yes, you have to listen to it.
Yes, you know, he kind of said, yeah, you...
Did I kill Hannah?
Yeah.
Yes.
He said, yeah.
Tony said yes.
And it's heartbreaking. But so as it's working up to it, there was a line from Hannah that I think we really want to dig into a little bit.
Right.
And it is, she was talking about Clay, and she was talking about how confident he is and how, and I think she says, you are who you are.
Right.
You don't care what others think. And she even goes on to talk about how, you know, I'm not like that. You know, even if I look like it, or even if I act like it, I don't feel that way.
Right.
And wow, it was like she just encapsulated in those few lines sort of what we have been talking about throughout this whole episode, the whole series, that people keep misinterpreting each other.
Right. That's right.
She thought that he was this confident,
right.
you know, and he had no idea what he was doing.
Right.
Right.
Right. I mean, which we knew through the whole thing.
Right.
I mean, we knew that. You know,
right.
Because he was filled with self-doubt. But this is what she says, you know, in the tape, you are who you are.
Right.
And,
right.
But, and that's true. I mean, she did believe that, you are who you are.
Mm-hmm.
But he's filled with self-doubt, but yet he knows he's a little bit of a nerd.
Right.
Okay. And everybody treats him that way. You know, everybody else has cars. They drive cars to school. He still has his bicycle.
Right. Helmet.
Yeah, they call him Helmet. She calls him Helmet. So he and everybody else acknowledges that he's a nerd.
Right.
But he's comfortable with that. He doesn't try to defend himself. He doesn't deny it.
Mm-hmm.
He's comfortable with that position. But he is very socially awkward.
Right.
You know, he doesn't know what to do with girls. And he keeps saying that.
Right. And what's funny, what's great is that he goes along with it.
That's right.
You know, the whole scene when he's leaving the Crestmont, and, you know, he's on the bike and he like pushes off and, you know, he's like playing
his motorcycle. Right.
Right. And it, you know, he really just kind of goes along with it without,
it's,
you know,
yeah,
he doesn't fight it.
Self-effacing, you know.
Right.
I know I'm a geek. I know I'm a nerd, but it, you know.
Oh, this comes later in the program, but remember when he's at the party and Jeff comes up to him and he says, dude, you got to get up there. You got to get up to the plate. You just got to swing. He goes, I know that those are all baseball references, but if I was going to go along with that, I would have to say, according to my batting average, I'm probably going to strike out. And it was like, he tried. He really tried to stick with that. But he just couldn't do it.
You have to love the kid. I mean, just have to admit. You not only like him, you admire him that he has these qualities.
Right.
And that he's not embarrassed and he doesn't apologize. And he doesn't try to be something he isn't.
Right.
Except when he sprays too much cologne on himself.
And that's something that we really, that we have the benefit of as viewers.
As viewers.
We really get to see that side of Clay, the uncertainty side.
Mm-hmm.
The side where he's trying on different clothes before he steps out and does all those different
things.
Tucks
his shirt in, takes it out.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And you know, because he's going to be the rebel without his shirt tucked in. We don't get that from Hannah. So we know what we see is Hannah presenting herself, you know, really strong and really confident. Mm-hmm. And except for some of the things that she says in the tapes, we really don't get to see her as questioning herself or, you know, really doubting herself.
She doesn't. That's right.
We don't really see that. But we have to believe that some of that's going on based upon some of the things she says in the tapes.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. But she doesn't. It's almost as though she doesn't question herself.
Right.
I mean,
you don't really get that.
There's very little reflection.
Right.
You know.
And I was thinking about that because
maybe that's what My daughter doesn't like
it. I was just going to say, I've talked to several teenagers and young adults, and some of the problems that they have with it is they look at Hannah and they say, you know, look, she was doing all these things. She was just fine. She was going out. She was. We saw that, but what Clay's character demonstrates to us is that to all of these other students, he looks just fine. He looks confident. He looks happy and all this kind of stuff. Right. But because we can see behind the scenes with him, because we're watching from his reference point, we see the uncertainty. And I think that that uncertainty, I would have to believe, based upon the movie, that that same uncertainty is there with Hannah as well. And she's doubting herself.
But she lacks that sort of self-reflection that he has.
Right.
You know, that it's always somebody else's fault.
Right.
This is what they're doing to me.
Yeah.
And she thinks of herself as an object rather than an agent.
And I think that well, I want to, let's put a pin in that and say that for the next episode. In just a few minutes. Yeah. In about 45 minutes. Again. Because I think it comes up again. And I think that we're going to be able to identify why. We're going to be able to identify why she has had that perspective throughout the entire series.
Right.
Because of what happens at Bryce's.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So we'll get to that in just a few minutes. That's going to be exciting. So, well, not really exciting, but it's
exciting
sad.
Exciting is okay.
That whole scene just makes me so sad. But again, the whole idea here is that she sees him as this confident, self-assured, you know, this guy, he just is him. You are just you.
You are who you are.
And you don't care what other people think.
Mm-hmm.
And man, did he care what other people thought.
Yeah.
You know, especially her.
Especially her. Yeah.
So that is adolescence. Mm-hmm. And for many, many teenagers, that is what they're experiencing. Right. They are struggling on the inside. They're struggling with this, trying to develop their self-awareness and to develop their identity. And they are uncertain about everything.
Right.
You know?
The uncertainty of an adolescent.
Right.
That knows no bounds.
Even if you look at some of these guys who seem so strong and so, you know, whether it's Zach or Justin or Bryce or Maurice, any of those, Maurice?
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? Yeah. All of those guys, they... Right. On the surface, they look like they're really confident. Mm-hmm.
None of them are.
But in these two episodes, you see all that stuff start going away.
Mm-hmm.
They're not that confident. Right. I mean, in the next episode where we talk about Bryce, and he's calling, you know, Justin, and he's saying, dude, you know, talk to me.
Right.
You know, I love you, man. I love you. And it's like you can see that he has, it's really difficult to have that sympathy for Bryce, and we'll get to it in just a minute, but it's definitely, you definitely can see that, that pain of adolescence that comes up.
But you see, you know, the sad part about this is that while they're all projecting confidence, they're all extraordinarily insecure inside. And I think that's typical of most adolescents, is regardless of what they project, they're terribly insecure about who they are.
Absolutely. Now, also at the party, and this is a good, well, I guess these first three bullets really kind of fit into this party, is, you know, Clay, of course, gets there at 6:55, and Jessica's like, the party starts at 7, it's 6:55, but 7 really means 9. And so Clay has no experience.
And Clay doesn't, that's right, he has absolutely no experience in
this
area.
He's like, I'll come back, and she goes, no, you can come help get things set up. And she hands him the chips, and he goes, do you want them organized any particular way? Do you want them,
which is
like,
perfect
mixed
for him?
It is exactly what you expect from him.
Yeah.
And she goes, make a choice, Clay. Be bold. And that again really shows this understanding of these different characters. I mean, Jessica knows Clay doesn't make decisions. He doesn't make choices very well.
Right.
And so she's like, just be bold, you know? figure out how you want to put the chips out.
Knock yourself out.
And then even as all the different party goers arrive, you know, he's still refilling them and everything. Chips, he's monitoring them, making sure that they're okay.
Doing everything right all the time.
Right. Of course, until Hannah arrives.
Yeah.
And then Hannah arrives and she gets his attention and is focused on him.
Because she wasn't supposed to go to that party.
Right, right. She wasn't going to be there.
So he was more than pleasantly surprised.
Right, right. So we get to this entire interaction between the two. And I think one of the things that I like about how they filmed this is you bounce back and forth between the memory that she's explaining on the tape, Clay's memory of what happened, and then, of course, the present time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as they break it up like that, you can sort of get a better indication of how each of them remember feeling at the time.
Right.
And so you have this, you know, they're sitting there talking to each other, and Clay is reflecting back about how nervous he was and how, you know, he didn't know what to say, he didn't know what to do. And she's reflecting back and thinking, I didn't know what to say, I didn't know what to do. And all the while, you know, they're making jokes with each other and they're, you know, looking natural while having absolutely no idea what they're doing.
And, yeah, the other thing I thought about, this makes you think of the parties that you went to when you were growing up, you know, and you remember how awkward you felt and how insecure you were. The other thing that struck me about these parties is, as I watched the parties, especially the Red Cups, I was thinking, this looks more like a college party. But then I reminded myself, this is what high school kids are doing.
Right.
You know, you go on vacation and leave your kids home alone. This could happen. Mm-hmm. That is the drinking, you know, and I thought these high school kids dragging in this keg of beer.
Right.
You know, and smoking, you know, all the smoke filling the room, probably weed. And all these high school kids drinking to excess and then driving, of course, you know. So, but again, parents beware.
Yeah. And I'll say that a lot of that isn't all that new. Like, I remember when I was in high school, Mom, I hope you're not listening. There were guys when I was in high school that had parties like that. I mean, they would have, you know, keg parties and things. And you wonder, where did they get those things? Because I was... You know, I didn't go to a lot of those parties.
You went through. You saw this firsthand.
Right. And you would go and you would see, and they would talk about these things, and then you learned that there's a store, you know, over there that's sort of in this back on this back road.
Right.
They'll sell you this stuff.
And nobody's going to check.
Right. And students teenagers just find a way to get the stuff.
They always find a way.
Yeah.
Nature finds a way.
That's right. You always like that Jurassic. That's your favorite Jurassic Park line.
I love that line.
Yeah. I'm thinking of other Jurassic Park lines. So the bounce back and forth in time allows us to really get a good feel for how they were misinterpreting each other.
Right.
They weren't.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they were. Oh my gosh, they were.
Yeah. Yeah.
They.
And it was so...
it's painful to think about. It really is. When you think of the struggle that Justin and Jessica have.
Right.
You know, it just goes on and on and on. And they just can't get it right.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As hard as they try.
Right.
They just can't. And there's the little pieces that, you know, influence everything and affect everything. And to jumping down, I'm gonna skip the line there from Sky, but you know, Hannah's projection of trauma on Clay when they were in the room, and you know, I don't know about you, but when Clay first went in and kissed her, it was you couldn't help but cheer for him. You know, it was like, great job, man. You know, because that was.
But he got courage pretty fast.
I was just gonna say that was almost out of character, because he just went for it, and you were hoping that he would, but it wasn't completely within his character to do that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they of course go into the room and they're kissing, and then his character returns. He stops and he goes, "Is this okay? Is this all right?"
Permission.
And you know, it was sweet. It was exactly what you would expect from Clay.
In contrast to
Right, some of the other things we'll talk about.
Yeah.
So, and of course, he was doing that without having any idea about any of that other stuff. Mm-hmm. And so
that's right. He didn't know any of that.
Right. And so, you know, the couple of things that we have going on here is as they're kissing and everything, Hannah's narrating a little bit through the tapes, and she starts to talk about she started to see in Clay all of these other things.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The Justin, the Zach, the other guys that have mistreated her. And she started to kind of freak out a little bit, and she pushed him away.
Bryce grabbing her by the fanny that day.
Right. And included in those memories were things that she remembers Clay doing. Like laughing about some of the things that people said or smiling at different things. Mm-hmm. And she pushes him away.
Right.
And what I think is important to say is that is... Not that I would say she has PTSD, but that is an approximation of PTSD.
And it is. And you can see the depth of the injuries that have been...
Right.
And again, we've talked many times about this. None of them alone would have been a problem.
Right.
But it was the accumulation of recurring insults and affronts and assaults that... just became overwhelming.
Right.
And you really see it in that scene because she does have a PTSD-like experience.
Right. Yeah, what happens with PTSD is when you experience a traumatic event or traumatic events, I guess it should say right off at the beginning, traumatic event is somewhat subjective.
Right.
What's traumatic to one person may not be traumatic to somebody else.
Right.
You know, somebody standing in line at a like a convenience store, mm-hmm. and somebody walking by and grabbing your backside, to one person that may be traumatic. For another person, that may not be traumatic. Yeah. So, so it's difficult. There is some subjectivity to it.
That's right. But when you consider the totality of her experiences. Right. And what that was, you know, it was associated with that list, you know, which was part of the damage. You know, had the list not appeared, maybe the grabbing wouldn't have been as traumatic.
Right.
But when you think of the context.
Right. And had the picture with Justin at the very beginning not happened, the list may not have mattered, and that. Right. So it is the accumulation. Mm-hmm. But then what happens is you have those traumatic events, and then when you're in a situation where... there are triggers or something that happens that's, again, either approximates or is similar to that one of those traumatic events, your brain sort of is triggered into, you know, a startle response.
That's
It's triggered into a fight or flight. It's triggered into some type of way to, I got to protect myself.
And that's exactly how the brain works.
Right.
You know, you've been through a traumatic experience. You remember it. When it comes up again, you recall it.
Right.
You know, and the brain is going to do what it has to do to protect itself.
And exactly. I mean, that is a perfectly natural, normal, healthy thing that we need it to do. Mm-hmm. Because if your brain thinks it's in danger, because it's been in danger before, it's got to say, hey, let's get to safety. Mm-hmm. So that's what was going on there when they were sitting in Jessica's bedroom. Right. And she started having those flashbacks in her mind. Right. And she pushes him away and, you know, yells at him to leave and to go away. And again, it's heartbreaking when you hear her say, you know, get away, go. And then the narration from the tape saying, but I don't really want you to go.
Right. That was the sad part.
Yeah. And you know, all Clay hears is, I wanted you to go. Right. I wanted you to leave. And, you know, and then... I wanted you to stay. And he says, you know, why didn't I just do that? It is all my fault. Mm-hmm. He kind of tunes all this other stuff out. Like when Hannah actually says, you don't really deserve to be on this tape, but if I'm going to tell my whole story, you have to be here.
Right.
And he doesn't hear that.
Right.
All he hears was, you know, I needed you to stay.
Right.
And you didn't. And how would he have known? And Tony tried to talk to him about it, and he didn't get it from Tony either.
No.
Tony, the unhelpful Yoda.
The unhelpful Yoda.
Yeah.
Right.
That was a fantastic line. I'm going to start calling you that. The unhelpful Yoda.
Okay.
So
across the bow.
But it's so it's so consistent and indicative of these kinds of issues that you have, you know, someone, you know, in a situation like this, in a predicament like this, and then they respond to some memory, some experience from the past, and the other person has no idea what to do.
Right.
They respond, you know, I think arguably Clay responded correctly.
Right. Yeah.
Though, you know, he later goes back and, you know, Clay thinks about what he should have done. He goes back and thinks about, well, I should have stayed and I should have talked to her and I should have told her that and loved her and I should have told her this and that.
And they replay that scene,
yeah.
You know, when they, what he should have done.
Right.
And how many of us have done that?
Oh,
jeez.
You know.
As I was thinking about that, I was like, man, I've done that so many times.
So many times.
Right. What I could have done if I'd rewritten the script.
Right. Mm. And it's, you know, and of course you can't.
No.
And, but you can beat yourself up and at this part in the program, of course, this is when he's there with Tony and he's standing on the ledge of that sort of like overhang there.
The escarpment.
And, you know, Tony's like, hey,
hey
step back. And he's like, well, what would happen? You know, what would be... Mm-hmm. And I like Tony a lot too, but it's just, he's struggling with, you know, the probably one of the most difficult emotions for us to deal with, and that is regret.
Yeah,
he is regretting not doing what he now knows that he should have done.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you know he's
carrying everybody's guilt though.
He is.
He's carrying his, which is profound, but he's carrying everybody else's too.
Right.
He knows what everybody has done to this object that he loved so much.
Right.
So he's carrying all that stuff. That's
right.
What the tapes did to him.
Yeah.
It was just one after another.
Yeah. Him more so than anyone else. Because
that's right.
Even the others who are really, really damaged, Justin, for example.
Yeah.
Alex.
Oh my God.
Who are really, really damaged by all of this. Even though they are injured, they're not carrying... They're still angry with Hannah.
Right.
You know,
right.
Justin is still angry with Hannah. If she wouldn't have done this, then all this, if we could just make all this go away.
Right.
And Clay's like, no, we need to look at what's happening. We need to fix this. We need to move.
Right.
So, and of course, Hannah says that those famous, terrible lines, you know, I didn't deserve to be with a guy like you.
What do you do like?
It's not you. It's me.
Right.
She actually says that. Mm-hmm. It's not you, it's me. And all of this is happening at that time when, you know, Clay's thinking about what he should have done. And it's just we put ourselves into those situations. We put ourselves into those scenarios where we are thinking about what we should have done, what we could have done, and you know, we're saying that these things aren't going to work out, not because they won't work out, but because we can't imagine them working out.
Right.
And there's a big difference between, you know, exploring things and, you know, exploring your identity and figuring out who you are and saying, sort of writing it off from the beginning and saying, nope, there's no way this is going to work out. I'm not good enough. You know, I don't deserve you. And not even giving it a try.
Right. And, you know, we have this recurring theme here of what I should have done.
Right.
Okay. And it's a theme throughout, but it really culminates in this episode of what I should have done. Clay did it and other people are doing it now. What I should have done.
Right.
And we talk about this series being a vehicle for us, for people to talk about suicide.
Right.
And I'm hoping that as people have watched the series, that this issue of what I should have done hits home.
Right.
Because when you're confronted with this, this is what you should have done.
Right.
So don't sit back and wonder whether you should have or not. Take action.
Right.
And I think that's the other theme. And I love about this series is it has impelled all of us to talk about it and to say the word suicide.
Right.
You know, do you mean suicide? Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, take the cloak off this thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's, use the words. Say what you're feeling. Mm-hmm. Say what you're thinking.
You know, are you going to do something harm? Are you going to harm yourself? Are you going to do something stupid? No. Are you are you thinking about killing yourself?
Right.
Let's just talk about that.
Right, right. And that goes to the last sort of quote that we have here, the last piece that we have here from this episode. And that was from Clay's
introduction.
From our
lovely Sky.
I want to know so much more about Sky.
Man.
She's awesome. She's awesome.
Oh.
Because talk about somebody that doesn't care what other people think, on the outside at least.
Right.
You know, and
but,
you know, she.
But we learn.
As unhelpful Yoda said, you know, we don't really know what's going on inside her. We don't really know what she's thinking. But she, you know, she's talking about and kind of confronting Clay about a few things. And Clay grabs her arm and pulls it out, and you can see cuts on her arm. And he goes, "Well, what's that?
What's this?"
And he goes, she says, "You know, that's what you do instead of killing yourself."
Right.
And you know, so we have that. Of course, I think that this whole series would be remiss without mentioning self-harm.
Right.
You know,
sure.
What do they call it? Non-suicidal self-injury.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we have here with Sky.
It's non-suicidal.
Cutting. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As she said, it's not, it's what you do instead of killing yourself.
Right.
There's not an intent to kill yourself. There's not an intent for suicide. Mm-hmm. It's just hurting yourself. And to some extent, it's, you know, it's punishing yourself. You know,
that's
people
right.
who cut themselves or do other things to injure themselves, they talk about wanting to feel again, wanting to see that they're still alive, wanting to have those sensations.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a whole podcast on this about it. You know, it's been some time ago now, but
months. Yeah,
it was a difficult topic because people freak out when they see that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we see it a lot. We see it very often, especially, of course, in teenagers.
Right.
But even adults, we see self-injurious behaviors.
We do, yeah.
And it's really, it's difficult to know what to do to manage that. But if you see somebody who's injuring themselves, you know, don't take them to the hospital. You know, don't go overboard. Don't don't make things worse by overreacting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, encourage them to talk to somebody. Encourage them to see a therapist or a psychologist or something, so that they can talk about what's going on and figure out how to feel and how to see themselves as alive in a healthier way. So,
yep.
Any other points from Clay's tape?
This was exhausting watching this one.
It was.
It was really good.
But then there was the next... Then we flipped the tape over.
Right.
And we got to side B, and that was Bryce.
Finally get to Bryce.
Oh, the way that this episode started with the flashbulb of the hot tub, and then it kind of gets into what happened, and she introduces it as the beginning of the worst day of her life.
Right.
And so... So this episode, it really pulls it all together, because what happens here is we see a lot of conflict in Hannah's family.
Right.
The parents are really, this started a couple of episodes ago, but things really start getting bad in the family for financial reasons.
Mm-hmm.
The pharmacy isn't doing as well as they would have hoped, and so they're behind on their rent, and they're doing everything. And this is where we see Hannah sort of starting to turn it all on herself.
Right. And that's what we were talking about earlier, that's the major change that really occurred. She lacks that self-reflection throughout all the other episodes, all the other tapes. And finally, she's starting to turn her anger inward.
Right. And it's for a very concrete reason, you know, she took on the responsibility of taking the deposit.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, one of those subtle things is she's trying to get in the car and she gets a phone call from Clay.
Mm-hmm.
And so she takes a call from Clay and you can see she gets distracted.
Right.
She starts talking about going to meet up to get her final check from the Crestmont. And she completely forgets about the deposit up on the roof of the car.
And you already know that her parents are struggling financially because they had set that scene up.
Right.
As soon as she put it on the roof of the car,
you knew
what was going to happen.
You knew it was going to happen.
You didn't know why,
but
you knew that was not going to make it into the inside of the car.
Yeah.
Right.
And
I've done that a few times.
A few times.
I remember losing coffee. When I used to put beverage container, I don't do that anymore.
No?
No, I had to lose a few. A few phones, too. Yeah. I never did. But there have been a few phones that have ended up on the street.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's true. You know, and you knew what was going
to happen. And so, and then, of course, as you see, it's driving down, you're like, no! And then it goes, flips off, and it's like, okay.
Oh, my gosh.
So, but she really starts taking that on herself now, because... Right. That was her fault. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. That was her fault. That was her responsibility because she took on that responsibility. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, of course, her mom gets really upset with her. She offers for them to take her money, you know, the money that she had from the thing. She offers to babysit and give money, and she offers for them to take her college fund. Right. But they don't, you know, they're struggling and trying to figure out what to do. And so it's the... Again, we have that shift where it's like, okay, this was my fault. Right. Maybe this is all my fault. Mm-hmm. And we see those kinds of tendencies now starting to come out.
Yep. Starting to turn it, to turn it inward. Mm-hmm.
So at the after all of that, I think that the scene is supposed to sort of depict that the parents, you know, were in the living room talking about what to do and what they were trying to figure out what they were going to do.
They were on the sofa.
Right.
Yeah.
And the parents both fell asleep on the sofa, right. And Hannah goes out to say something, and because she's going to walk, she wants to go for a walk.
She wants to go for a walk, right.
And so mom's sort of half asleep, half awake, says, it's just like, you know, put on a jacket or something, it's cold or
blah,
something.
Blah, blah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so Hannah leaves, right. And she walks and walks and walks and ends up at Bryce's house. Because she hears the party.
The lure of the party.
Right.
And once again, good message for... Parents, parties can be a problem.
Right.
Bad things can happen at these parties.
Right.
So be very, very careful.
Yeah. It's not necessarily to say that you ban your kid from all parties.
No.
But it's to say, just be mindful.
You need to know that your child is going into a high-risk situation when they go to a party. And all the things that we saw at these parties do happen and can happen. So be very, very cautious. But you have to allow your kids to go.
Right.
You know, you can't put them in a bubble.
Right.
You cannot protect them from this. If they don't do it now, they're going to do it as soon as they go to college.
Right. Right.
So,
and so
better to do it while they're with you.
Right. It's about education. It's about empowering. It's about all of that. But Hannah was hurt. She was weak at that time. She was fragile.
Right.
And she's walking, and she hears the party, the sound of good times, and everything. And she walks, and she meets up with them at Bryce's house, and she gets it is what it is. It was peer pressure that got her into the hot tub.
And Jessica said none of us have bathing suits,
right?
You know, which again. Shouldn't be a problem for anybody.
Right.
And the victim isn't the temptress.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
We all understand that. But again, these are teenage boys with raging hormones.
Right.
Who think they're entitled.
Who think they're entitled. That's a really important point as we talk about Bryce.
Right.
Because, of course, if you saw the program, you know that what happens is there's a couple... A few couples in the hot tub, and then there's Bryce, and then there's Hannah sitting sort of opposite each other. And one couple by one couple, all of a sudden, Bryce and Hannah are left alone in the hot tub. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, as soon as the bubble stopped, it was like, oh boy. Mm-hmm. And so it's painful because I've heard it in other movies and other programs, but the words that Bryce is saying while he's assaulting her, he goes, "We're having fun."
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, hey, you know, it's okay.
Just relax.
And you see the, she starts out fighting, and then she gives up.
Right.
And then, you know, she's making the fist, and then when she just lets the fist go, and she's just laying there sort of staring. It is probably one of the most emotionally charged scenes of that type in a movie that I've mm-hmm. that I've seen. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't. There's really nothing shown,
right?
But it's really intense, but I think that there's a lot of information mm-hmm. in that scene.
Yep.
The way that, you know, people talk about sexual assaults, and they, you know, they say, you know, they talk about fighting back, and they talk about, you know, do this and do that.
Wow.
And the reality is that if you can, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Do it. But because someone couldn't.
Right.
Doesn't mean that they're weak. It doesn't mean that they asked for it. It doesn't mean that they allowed it to happen. It doesn't mean, you know, you mentioned you can't blame the temptress.
Right.
She wasn't asking for any of that. She said no.
Right.
She attempted to stop it. She did everything mm-hmm. that you would want and hope that she would do. But it wasn't enough.
And yet, when quizzed later about it, said, oh, no, I didn't do that. No, I didn't do that.
Right.
And then she becomes right. an accomplice.
Right, right.
It puts women in a...
Right. And so I think that one of the things that I have learned in working with... in the various capacities that I work with, the different populations of people that I work with, I think that I'm consistently surprised, and maybe I should stop being surprised, but it is surprising to me how many people have had that kind of experience.
Uh-huh.
How many mm-hmm. women have had that experience that Hannah had,
right.
The sexual assault I have to feel like the primary statistics that are out there mm-hmm. for it, I think it's about a third or so, I have to feel like those are low.
It's got to be an underestimate.
It has to be mm-hmm. an underestimate.
Right.
And so, you know, what it makes me think of when it comes to my own daughter, when it comes to teenage girls mm-hmm. that I work with, we really have to work hard to empower them, to let them know what, mm-hmm. you know, saying their rights isn't the correct thing, but know what they can do, what they should do, how they should do those things, give them the tools and the, mm-hmm. the equipment that they need to be able to manage, right. better manage those kinds of situations. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know that we do a very good job of that.
We don't.
I mean, some parents do, but
we don't give them lines to use. We don't give them ways to get out of these situations. Right. We don't give them enough information about how to avoid getting mm-hmm. into these situations.
Right.
And I think of the more and more parents are doing this now. You know, if you do drink, call me. I'll come and get you.
Right.
There won't be any questions.
Right.
You know, call me. I will come right. and get you. And if Hannah would have had that when these things were happening, that she could have just called her parents and said, come and get me.
Right.
I'm in danger.
Right. Like you know, something just as a simple, quick example that a parent could do, you know, talking with their teenage daughters, is to say, you know, if you go to a party like that,
right.
and you find yourself in any kind of situation similar to mm-hmm. that, whether it's a hot tub or a room right. or a whatever, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you find yourself in that situation, and as the last couple is leaving, and it's just you and one other guy, as that last couple is leaving, that's when you go ahead and get up and get out of the
right.
get out too. That's when you can look for your way out, because that person is not going to be as likely to right. do anything if that other couple is there, if that other people are there.
And this is why you don't ever get caught in a situation where you're alone.
Right.
You know, my daughter just graduated from college and said, we always went together.
Right.
We never left anybody alone anywhere.
Right. Right.
And those are the sorts of skills you need to develop, except now you have to develop them in high school.
Right.
And, you know, you have to tell your children, you know, when it starts getting, you know, people start grabbing you and touching mm-hmm. you inappropriately, it's probably time to leave, because right. then you're entering a danger zone.
Right.
And that may be the best time to leave.
But Richard, you know, as well as I do, that a lot of that stuff happens at school.
But it's happening at school. Well, that's what that's what they said.
And it's awful because I know high schoolers that I talk to who say, oh, there's an area of my school that I don't go to unless I have somebody with me.
Right.
Because that area of the school is not safe.
Right.
And it's... I just keep overusing this, but it's heartbreaking to think that we have these areas in our kids' lives where they don't feel protected.
Right.
In an area where they should feel protected.
We built schools when this, I don't think it happened.
You know,
when these schools were built, these sorts of things. Now you have to have cameras all around the school because this stuff does happen.
Right.
We never had sex in the bathroom.
Right.
I don't know, maybe... I mean, it didn't happen.
Right.
Now it happens everywhere. It happens in elementary schools.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so schools were built with... Yeah. And this... They didn't have
the institution of school. Not necessarily the buildings, but yeah,
the institution.
They just did not anticipate these things happening.
There are places in schools where you don't have access. I mean, where you can get caught in some school buildings.
Oh, right. That's what you mean. Yeah.
You know. Yeah. But they weren't designed with this. And now, if you built a school now, you would say, okay, we have to keep this open and let's not have any inaccessible areas.
Right, right. Yeah, it's unbelievable. And it's terrifying to think that, you know, we send our kids to those places. And, you know, Noreen, you know, mentioned that it's, of course, it's primarily girls, but there's, you know, there's situations that happen with males as well.
The same thing.
You know,
absolutely.
Things, there are assaults, sexual assaults that happen to males as well.
Absolutely.
And, you know, certainly females is the
it's more highest
prevalence, but, but so often it's just not reported.
Right.
You people are embarrassed, and they're
you're reported. You don't report it because you're intimidated. You're embarrassed.
Right.
You're afraid, and you just assume nothing's going to happen. And you remember, it depends who the assailant is.
Right.
If it's one of these alpha males, chances are, not much is going to happen.
Right.
Especially if it's a wealthy alpha male.
Right. Well, and we saw in that previous episode where, you know. Well, I can't remember if it was this episode or the previous episode. It was one of these two, where you know Jessica is spending all that time with Bryce,
right?
And Justin is there, and Justin says, "Because he raped you,"
right?
And like, you know, Jessica was of course upset with Justin,
right.
and Justin leaves, and you know, some other things happen. We'll talk about just a second, but then, like. It's sort of, you can sort of left with the idea that the party kept going, you know, everybody was still hanging out and things were still happening for exactly the reason that you were talking about. But I think that one of the last things, I mean, there's still so many other things to talk about, but one of the last things we wanted to talk about with this episode is Bryce. The bad and the sad is what I have there on the slide because, you know, he is a villain. You know, but he's also, he is a type of victim himself. We've been through 13 episodes, well, 12 episodes to date. We have, that have spanned over 2 or 3 years of high school. We haven't seen his parents yet.
Right.
We have not yet seen his parents.
I was struck by that. I said, well, eventually we're going to meet his parents.
Right.
We're going to see who these people are. And the scene in his house where he has these parties. And where are his parents?
Right. And then, you know, even at the end of this last episode, not at the end, but within this last episode, when Clay goes to his house to try to get him to admit to what he did, the parents aren't there. He's hiding marijuana right there on the coffee table.
Right on the coffee table.
Yeah, my parents are not going to be back for a couple weeks.
Right.
There's one episode several weeks back where... he's talking to his mom on the phone, and he's like, you know, everything's fine here. You guys just stay and have fun.
Right.
So there is no connection there. There is there is no relationship between him and his parents.
None.
There's no... he has nobody like that.
Literally and figuratively, they don't exist.
Right.
You know, they're just not there. This is a kid who's raising himself.
Right.
This is a young child.
right?
Who's raising himself,
right? Mm-hmm. And it's well,
and you wonder why he and there's no mystery of why he and Justin have some commonalities,
right?
I mean, they share this the absence of their parents,
and I think that you see that best after all of this happens. And after, you know, Justin says that, you know, calls him a rapist, basically, right, at that party, a little later, you see Bryce on the phone calling Justin, leaving him a voicemail, and
right,
says,
hey,
yeah, man, why won't you take my call? Mm-hmm. I don't even understand what's happening.
Right.
You know, I love you, man. Just call me.
And it looks like he genuinely misses that relationship.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's really the first and really only time... Mm-hmm. that we see any of that type of emotion from mm-hmm. Bryce.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, and there's just no, we just don't see anything like that. And mm-hmm. so we have this alpha male, as you, right, as you refer to him, who has no supervision.
Mm-hmm.
He has nobody sort of guiding him, directing him. You made a comment earlier today as we were preparing for this. You said that, you know, what high school senior sits around and drinks alcohol the way that he does? Like, it's just, not that he's pounding beers or anything, but it's like he's drinking hard liquor, like in a cup.
A crystal glass, yeah, out of a decanter, you know, and he's wandering around the house like the lord of the manor, and he's 17 years old.
Yeah. You know? It's just... He, because of the absence of his parents, because right, that there's nobody there to create boundaries for him, to create expectations right, for him, he is sort of left to think, I am the lord of the manor.
I can have my weed out here, and I can drink the alcohol, and I can have parties. And
even as he says to Clay, he says, look, you can call it rape if you want to,
mm-hmm,
but it she's like every other girl. They all want it.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm, and I think that it really is a mentality that he has developed,
mm-hmm,
based upon the absence of anybody telling him anything different.
I'm entitled.
Yes.
And I'm entitled to this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can just have what I want.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so...
And it's not because he's rich.
Right.
It's because he's parentless.
Right.
And Justin is parentless.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we have this, and I love the part where Justin is talking to Jessica, mm-hmm, and he's, in some way, he's justifying not saying anything, not telling her what happened, not being angry with Bryce and doing anything about it.
Not saving her.
Right, because he was scared and because Bryce helped him, he didn't go out and buy new shoes, he just... told me that he had an extra pair of shoes that he let me have that were my size.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, again, we see this relationship, mm-hmm, that Bryce has with Justin.
Justin, right.
But that is really the only place, right, that we see Bryce have, mm-hmm, any form of relationship. And even right, that relationship isn't healthy.
And once again, we see the complicated nature of what their struggles are, mm-hmm, and their struggles with each other. Right. These are not cardboard two-dimensional figures. Right. Each one of these kids had complex struggles. And right, so as parents, as you deal with your children, remember, these are not flat. They're not two-dimensional.
Right.
They're very, very complex, right, much more complex than we. And I think about Inside Out, you know, right, where we talked about that this morning, that... anger, you know,
yeah,
it's always there. It's always present. Okay.
Right.
But when they were having that argument at the table and Riley got angry with her dad.
Right.
And it wasn't really anger. There was a lot of other stuff going on.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
and dad, you know, acknowledged more than just anger.
Right.
Because it's not a single dimension.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much more going on, and it's so much, we're much more complex,
mm-hmm,
than just these
absolutely
single emotions.
When children react angrily, you're seeing anger, but geez, peek behind the curtain because
right,
there's a lot of other stuff going on.
Right.
And you got to deal with all of it.
And the massively important thing with Bryce is that there's no one there to give any guidance, to do any of that for him.
To set any limits, to guide him. No, it's so sad.
So if if he's a senior this year, that would put him a year ahead of Clay. So that just means that this started when he was a sophomore. The program started when he was a sophomore. And so for those 3 years, we don't see any significant involvement. Right. We don't even see there's no acknowledgement of his parents at any of the basketball games.
Right.
Remember, he was made the captain of the team, and his parents, as far as we know, his parents weren't there to cheer him on or anything. And so, again, it's not to justify his actions in any way, but it's to say that those actions exist within a context, and to completely remove that context would be would not give us the full picture of everything that's going on.
And again, it gives you pause to say, well, wait a minute, before you make a judgment, let's make sure we understand what this person is going through.
Right. It goes back to what Unhelpful Yoda said, that we don't know what's going on inside that person.
That's right.
Now, again, that's not to say that give any justification for Bryce's actions.
Right.
It's just that he was damaged as well, though in a different way.
Right.
So,
but he turned his against others. Hannah turned hers against herself.
Right. Indeed. Yeah. Right. So it was heavy. It was heavy. And again, the scene. It was just so, emotionally raw.
It was her resignation that was so painful.
Right.
She couldn't do anything about it. I mean, he's an athlete. He's a high school athlete.
Right.
She's not. She's a little pudgy.
And when
she's not a cheerleader or gymnast or something. She's just a little, young girl.
Right.
And he's a.
Right. And when he was beating up Clay, it was that was a little brutal. And then at the end, he's like, oh, come on, man. You know, I got to hand it off to you. And then gives him
a drink.
He's like, good grief, man. It teeters on sociopathic. So he's
bordering on the sociopathic.
Yeah. It's problematic. Right. So those were two intense episodes.
They were.
But I think that's all we pulled from that. I mean, there's other things that we could pull from it, but that was all that we did. So,
but you know what I liked? I liked that each week the characters become more complex.
Well, you know,
I love that increase in complexity.
I think that, you know, next week is our last episode. Next week we're going to talk about the final episode, episode 13.
We're not going to do episode 14?
Well, we will touch on episode 14 a little bit. What I was thinking that we could do next week as well is maybe we could tease some of that apart. Because I think that, you know, what we really want people to understand is that every character in this program, they really exist.
Yeah, they're out there.
Every school has a Clay. Right. Every school has a Hannah, has a Jessica, has a Justin, has a Bryce.
Absolutely.
Every school has one of those characters, one of those people, and sometimes more than one person. Mm-hmm. And I think that it might be an interesting exercise to kind of go through and tease some of that apart from the individual students' perspective, but also from the parents. Mm-hmm. Because we have a lot of different parenting styles depicted in this program.
Right.
You know, you have our favorite, which is Clay's parents.
Right.
Love Clay's parents.
That was funny. Are you and his dad? Mm-hmm. Were they reading cereal that morning?
He's always eating something. But you have Clay's parents who I think did a really good job with things. But then you have Zach's parents and you have Alex's parents and you have Justin's parents. I mean, there are some of those parents that it's like you just want to really...
Justin's.
Justin's mom just is despicable. As bad as Zach's mom is.
No, no.
Justin's... You know, when you were saying that about Zach's parents a couple weeks ago, I was like, wait, buddy. Just wait until you meet Justin's parents.
Oh, man.
His mom and that boyfriend when he was holding him against the wall and choking him. It was like, and then Justin, it'd make you cry. Justin looks at him and says, "Mom," and she goes, and she just shakes her head and she walks into the away. It's like,
and closes the door.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's painful. Mm-hmm. And I, again, not to belabor it, but that is, that happens every day.
Mm-hmm. It's happening everywhere. It's happening absolutely everywhere.
Every day. We see kids here in the office. We see kids that we work with in schools. And that kind of stuff happens all the time. Mm-hmm. And to think, we've already been going for an hour. But it's like, I want to keep going. Because, you know,
it's okay.
You see that stuff happening. And then you give them a standardized test and say, okay, let's see what you know. How in the world could any of these characters be expected to perform in school?
Okay, you opened it up.
I know. It's like, no, we'll save it for next week.
What are schools doing right now? They're trying to standardize everything. Mm-hmm. Common core.
Yeah.
Everybody in the same place. Zero tolerance policies.
All
these things are to make everybody the same. We'll do it next week. It just makes me insane that schools don't acknowledge, that educational reformers don't acknowledge that all of these kids are bringing all of this stuff to school.
All of it.
And you take one kid who grows, Clay, who's had all these advantages, taking the same test beside Justin, who's getting beaten up and knocked around by this scumbag of a boyfriend. They take the same test and they're both expected to pass it.
Right.
Who makes these rules?
And it's the tendency that we have to just brush it under the rug, act like it doesn't exist, act like it's not happening,
Jessica.
Right.
Poor child's drunk most of the time.
Right.
But she's expected to pass these same tests.
Right.
She's drunk for a good reason.
Right.
You know, she's been assaulted. All this stuff is happening to her.
Right.
And no, just sit down and take this final test and
take
this end of course exam. And if you don't pass it, it could affect the rest of your life.
The rest of your life.
Like, this isn't happening.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Can we talk about that next week?
We have a lot to talk about next week.
All right.
So episode 13, but then we have all this other stuff. It makes me so frustrated because it's just not...
No.
I want to say it's not fair, but because it's not. And it's not that anything has to be fair or we're guaranteed that anything is fair, but... That doesn't mean that we have to make it unfair.
Okay. Let's not use the word fair. Let's use the word stupid. Somebody's stupid to not acknowledge these. Okay.
I agree with you. You know I agree with you.
It leaves me speechless.
I know.
The stupidity of it all leaves me absolutely speechless.
But it's these types of programs that really... You know, when you think about real life, you see that, and you pulled your coffee cup down. Noreen says she likes your coffee cup.
Noreen,
and it said up there the little thing says my brain has too many tabs open.
Yeah,
that's what it says up there.
And that's not like a potato on my head. That's our brain. That's our model of a brain.
But
I'm going to make Bernie sit here next time. But no, it makes my blood boil to think of how 20%, at least 20% of children have these kinds of struggles, and yet they're expected to perform at the same level in the same way as kids who have all the advantages and none of the pressures.
Right. I mean, yeah, it's sad. It's unfortunate. And again, everything depicted in this program, every character exists.
These weren't dreamt up. These kids exist.
Yeah. So, but we'll talk more about that next week.
Okay.
And wrap up this series.
It's too bad. I don't like to see this come to an end.
No. But we'll find a new series.
Okay.
If if you're listening and you know of another series that kind of touches on some of this stuff, or that doesn't touch on some of this stuff, but we can
touches
kind of
on other things.
We can kind of dissect some things out of it. We've said it before that there's a lot of psychological principles in most things that we watch and are exposed to. So it'll be great. So, all right. Anything else?
No, that's all.
You're not mad about anything else?
Oh, gosh.
So we will be back next Thursday, which would be June 22nd.
There's a reason why international agencies ban torture.
Why is that?
You don't do that to helpless people.
Oh.
There's a good reason why
yeah.
torture is banned. You don't take somebody helpless and torment them.
Right. Yeah. So there's the last slide. It shows we are going to be here on the
22nd.
6:22 at 6:30.
Okay.
And we will be here for that last episode.
I'll be here.
We hope that you are able to join us and listen in and ask some questions. Help sought but never found.
That's good old Mr. P.
Oh. Next week is all Mr. Porter. You knew
it's all on you, Mr. Porter.
You knew it was going to come back to
it's
Mr. Porter.
It's all on you.
So, all right. So, thank you all for joining us. We had a few people join us tonight, so that was great. We really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
But join us next week as we
come back.
Wrap it up. And again, invite your friends. Mm-hmm. It'll be great. So, until then, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.